Cooper comes up, hits it. Yeah!
Oh, what a shot! What a goal! What a goal by Mick Martin!
Don't reach. What is the goal? Richie!
Welcome to the official Scotland podcast. As we all look forward to UEFA Euro 2020, this episode is all about looking back to the last time the men's team played at a major tournament. This podcast features interviews with Captain Colin Hendry, Kevin Gallagher, and a Scotland fan who attended all three of our matches, Martin Riddle, as well as a selection of behind-the-scenes content with head coach Craig Brown, taken from his spectacular World Cup diary. It's the summer of 1998. Bewitched rules the airwaves. Titanic is just coming off its box office record-breaking run as the smash hit film of the year. A new type of technology has just hit the shelves too, the DVD. However, for football fans, there's only one thing on their mind, the FIFA World Cup, to be held across France. Having missed out on qualification for the 94 World Cup, Scotland were fresh from qualifying for Euro 96. With a core group of players and consistency from the Euros, sights were set on a place at the World Cup in France, under the guidance of manager Craig Brown. Martin Riddle talks us through his thoughts on Craig Brown from a fan's perspective.
I remember when he was first appointed, people were not very happy. And that's, I think we just thought, this is not adventurous enough appointment. Thought it was quite low-key and thought we deserved a bigger name. But a lot of people maybe didn't understand the amount of work that Craig had done with the 21s up to that point. And, I mean, he'd got the 21s to either the semi-final or the final of one of the European Championships, which is, I mean, that's what they use for qualifying for the Olympics.
Colin Hendry gives his thoughts on Craig Brown as a leader from the player's perspective too.
He got the most out of everybody, I think, because I wouldn't say, as you look at a lot of modern-day coaches and everything else that's involved in the game, they've been teachers or public speakers or whatever. All right, they can conduct themselves and they can get themselves across. Craig Brown was a teacher. Bruni was a teacher. But he looked after everybody. He made sure that everybody felt important. And that was from Huey Allen, and who also looked after the kit at the time. And everybody, you know, the coach driver, the people at the hotel looking after the bit of security that we had at that time, everybody that was involved was made to feel important. And that's how Craig really gathered everybody together and made a team of it.
He was very successful. And with him having done such a good job in that role for a number of years, he knew all the players that were coming through. So it probably was the best appointment, even though you felt a little bit meh at the time, but great appointment.
The close atmosphere within the squad proved to be a vital asset in qualifying, as Kevin Gallagher explains.
I think at that stage we were getting called Dad's Army, useless, you're too old now. Everybody was getting it, and we were. And we knew it ourselves, but we knew, heart of hearts, we never had anybody behind us to come up and take our positions. But we never took it for granted because we were, as Craig had built this club side now, and it was very, very difficult to break into it. And that's what it done. And what we'd done together, we'd done it together. You know, if somebody was kind of pushing me about, somebody else would come in and look after me, get rid of the opposition. That's the way we worked. We worked as a team. It wasn't individuals, you're on your own. We worked as a team, and I think that's what got us to these campaigns. It was togetherness that we had was unbelievable.
What stood out through qualifying was a clear style of play. There was an identity to the squad.
Craig would say, watching everything that's going on in the club, your club football, then he wouldn't set up a system where it was really foreign to anybody that they couldn't play it. And generally, it was a three at the back. And because of this, because we did really well because of that, I thought, because we had good players in front of us as well. Gary McAllister, John Collins, Craig Burley, and you know, there's a lot of players in there that could handle the ball. And, you know, we did have a route out, not going direct, not lumping the ball forward, because we'd got some decent strikers as well that worked their trolleys off, to be fair, like Sir Gordon Jury, Kevin Gallagher, Billy Dodds, and all these, you know, Scott Boo. They worked very, very hard at putting other teams under pressure. But then with the three at the back, we could always drop the two wide men back in, and it's difficult to beat. That's what we were really quite difficult to beat.
Well, with three centre halves, or in some cases it was five centre halves, we had actually as wing backs, but we knew that three centre halves were playing at the top of the game. We knew three centre midfielders were playing at the top of their game. That was our strengths. And we had myself, Gordon Dury and Darren Jackson. So two out of the three were playing, scoring goals. We were all scoring goals at our clubs. So realistically, down the spine of the side, we were strong. But the strength of our side was defensive. And that's the way that Craig wanted us. So we ended up 3-5-2, but it was a 5-3-2 we played. And it was very much counter-attacking football. And we just relied a lot on the pace of the defenders. So we defended, sucked everything in, stopped everything, and then bang, we caught teams on the break, and we caught some of the best teams on the break, and we hurt some of the best teams as well.
I remember being at the game that we qualified, which I think was actually at Celtic Park, and I remember coming back to Edinburgh afterwards, and one of our friends, his brother had won the lottery a couple of years ago, believe it or not, a couple of years before that. He was a fisherman from Peterhead. He was staying in the Caledonian Hotel at the West End of Edinburgh, which is a very exclusive and great upmarket hotel, and the guy had so much luck having won the lottery a couple of years before that. He'd caught the match ball about 5 minutes before the end. The match ball had gone into the crowd. He had the match ball, and one of my best pals, me and Slash, were playing keepy uppy in the foyer of the Caledonian Hotel with the ball that we had just qualified for the World Cup with. Oh, incredible scenes. Absolutely unbelievable. The concierge, I'm not quite sure he really understood what was going on, but he wasn't very impressed, because it's fair to say we'd had a few drinks by then. So our football retention skills weren't the best. So it was unbelievable. I mean, the feeling was just great. Everybody was, I remember some of the merchandise at the time. People are getting loads of T-shirts done. There's songs coming out. But having said that, I mean, although we hadn't qualified for a couple of campaigns, everybody still had the memories of when we were regularly qualifying. Yeah. I mean, right through to 1990. So it was fresh in everybody's mind, different come the event that's about to happen, this summer.
One big blow to the squad ahead of the tournament, however, was the loss of captain Gary McAllister to a serious knee injury. While the respect McAllister had around the camp saw him travel with the squad, Colin Hendry was appointed as captain in his stead.
What happened was, it was in December, and I get a phone call late at night. It was about 10 o'clock, half past 10 at night, and there's a reporter, a Scottish reporter. He just said, "Colin, have you heard the news?" I said, "No." He said, "Oh, Gary McAllister's got injured tonight in a reserve game. He's coming back from injury." I said, "Oh, is he?" I said, "What are you ringing me for?" I said, "Unless he's serious." "Well, he is. Yeah, he's done his ACL. He's done his cruciate." And I said, "Oh, you're joking." I said, "So you probably won't make the World Cup." I said, "Right, so that probably means you're going to be the captain." I said, "Right." I said, "Well, at this minute in time, I've nothing to say." And then the day after, I just rang Craig, and he said, "Aye, Colin, looks as if Gary's out." But he came with us. He travelled with us and everyone else. So that was because Gary is the best player I've played with all round. Gary McAllister, you know, people talk to me about the best players I've played with, played against. Against, goodness me, there's a list against, but Alan Shearer, Gary McAllister's up there as the all-round best player I played with, and that was extremely disappointing that he didn't travel to the World Cup playing 98. I mean, I've got to be honest, captain Scotland, especially at such a fantastic tournament, and, you know, it's the greatest honour you could ever really, really have.
Scotland were drawn in a group with Brazil, Norway and Morocco. And the Tartan Army were making their way to Paris for the tournament's opening fixture versus the reigning world champions, Brazil.
I can still remember queuing up to fly over to Paris the day before the first match. We must have flown about the 8th or 9th of June. I think the tournament started on the 9th or 10th of June, something like that. And I still remember queuing up at Edinburgh Airport in the queue and seeing a couple of guys that I recognised, a couple of guys I'd met on away trips, and being a bit of somebody that hadn't travelled that extensively at that point with the Scotland team. It was good to see a couple of faces that I recognised, and I'm sure they felt the same as well. And it was just unbelievable. And again, these are back in the days before you're booking any accommodation on the internet. You've not got mobile phones. You didn't have hotels.com or booking.com or Skyscanner. It was very much, a lot of it was like kind of turn up and see what happens. But to be in the stadium was just unbelievable with all the Tifosi displays and in the amazing sunshine. And arriving at the game, you got the train out to Saint-Denis to, and you're rubbing shoulders with the Brazilian fans who are, I mean, that's just a way of life for them. They do that every 4 years. So, whereas for us, it was just incredible to be there. Just the colours, hearing the just the songs, like the samba coming for the Brazil fans. You're hearing the anthem for the tournament just continually going on. Everything's in your head and you're having a few drinks, sharing a few drinks, a few stories with people, making more stories with people. And then to go into the stadium and just to look about you and think, probably the second biggest game that was going to be watched that year, the opening match of the World Cup, with the final being the biggest. It was just an incredible place to be. And it still gets the hairs on the back of my neck. It absolutely does. Superb.
It's just, no, it cannot, doesn't get any better. All the pictures are still my mum's. You go in the hallway, it's just bedecked with that said moment in time.
Scotland fans at the stadium were in fine voice, boosted by the arrival of players wearing full kilts.
Well, I was for the kilt. We spoke about it. I remember we had the meeting about it. We all had meetings and we had the meeting about it. And the only one really that wasn't going to wear a kilt was the gaffer, was Craig. He didn't want to wear the kilt. But the boys agreed to it. We all went, yes, we're all up for the kilt. No other national team has done it. We've done it. We all thought about, we're having a conversation, Dad's army, blah, blah, blah. Let's go and enjoy it. Let's go and do something for the nation, make them proud of us. And we couldn't tell anybody. They told the wives, you can't tell anybody.
It was like a one-off. I think we'd spoke about it in 96. Didn't really get somebody to bite on that idea from that, you know, from the commercial side of things. But it was, that was really, really special.
It was something that the team had never really fully endorsed before, was like wearing kilts. I mean, I'm sure up to that point, there'd be a number of them probably had never worn a kilt in their life. And it was in the 10 years or so leading up to that match, that's when more and more people at the football started wearing kilts. The Tartan Army, guys bedecked in tartan from head to toe. And that was something, that was a real bond with the, you could see the team aiming to make that bond with the players, with the fans, just by, this is the uniform we're wearing. And believe me, it was bloody hot that day as well. So it wasn't really kilt weather, I can testify to that.
Everybody was really, really into it because at that, you know, because going back to Craig and how he set up everything, everybody felt was that was involved felt important, and it was important that that was like that. It was important at that point in time was that you were Scottish, even if you were born in England. Even if you were there because you're Scot, your granddad's Scottish, your dad's Scottish, your mum's, whatever, you're Scottish, you're playing for Scotland, you've been picked to play for Scotland, and that's it. That was the focal point of it all. And then, of course, the traditional attire to walk out at the opening game of the World Cup. And I mean, the Brazilians, they just absolutely loved it, the fans. They were just mesmerised by the whole thing.
We wished the kilts were a little bit lighter, because I think I must have lost about a stone walking about Saint-Denis before the game, just with the heat of the kilts. But it was what a massive experience it was just wearing them. It was brilliant.
One downside to Scotland's involvement in the opening match, however, was the disruption that the opening ceremony had on preparations, as described by the manager in his behind-the-scenes documentary, Craig Brown's World Cup Diary.
Because the pitch was still being used for the opening ceremony, the players had to do their individual warm-ups indoors. They were working in the specially designed warm-up area, each player operating his own personal warm-up.
It was unbelievable. Nobody really told us to the day before that we wouldn't be able to warm up on the pitch. Because obviously the event was going to happen, we're opening the World Cup, but you know, I think we were just preparing as normal. We're going to go out, we'll warm up normal, we'll be nice and warm, stretched, blah, blah, blah. No, you've got a room 20 feet by 20 feet with a pillar in the middle. The goalkeeper's got to do a warm up, you've got to do running, we're sprinting down a corridor. Okay, same for both sides, but we, I think, struggled to come to terms with that mentally. I think that was a, it was like someone just painting over a window, so you couldn't just see out, and I think that was the downside of it. And when we went out and the atmosphere gets you, we just wanted to go on that grass and run about to get ready for the game. But as we'd done that, we kicked off.
With preparations complete, it was time for the match a nation had been waiting for. Scotland versus Brazil.
You look at the Rivaldo, Bebeto, Romario was on the bench, Dunga, Roberto Carlos, Tafarel, Ronaldo, of course, he's up there. But he was injured, wasn't he? And there was an injury hanging over him pre-tournament. And the body, the governing body of the football in Brazil football, and then I think it was Nike, had a distinct disagreement whether he should play, whether he shouldn't play.
Bebeto. Three Scotsmen, Burley didn't quite make it, César Sampaio did, an unlikely scorer, and Brazil lead.
The opening parts of the game and things that we hadn't done for the corner kick, for example, we'd never let teams score for set pieces in the whole campaign. You know, I think we lost one set piece, I think, if we did. Never lost them, but yet in the opening 15 minutes, we switched off.
It's no surprise to go a goal down, to be honest. I mean, you're playing the best team in the world. And the players they had at their disposal is just beyond anything we can comprehend. But as a Scotland fan, you're always optimistic. You always, I think we can win every game. There's never a game, even when there's 5 minutes to go and you're 2-0 down, you still have that belief when you follow a team. And then when we got the penalty, which, it was on the soft side, let's say. Be given in today's game, but back then, I'm not sure that was a penalty. And then when John Collins was just lining up to take that, it was unbelievable. You're thinking to yourself, here we are against the best team in the world. And, I mean, I kicked the ball, I'm right-footed. So I've never really, John Collins being left-footed, you kind of imagine myself in the shoes or in the boots of the penalty taker. But John Collins is probably one of my favourite players that's ever played for Scotland, regardless of what happened there. And I had no doubts that he was going to stick it away.
Collins against Tafarel. Vital for Scotland. And he finds the corner. Tafarel went the right way, but couldn't reach it.
I don't like admitting it. I don't like saying I didn't really dive in my career. But against Sweden and Sweden, I had a very, very similar opportunity to do the thing. And I stood up thinking, I can maybe get the ball and try and score here. It didn't happen. And it was an opportunity wasted, really. And that stuck in my head. So when it came across and I seen the ball going down, I thought, I can get to this ball. And I looked and Tafarel was in the same line. And I thought, well, he's going to dive on it. I've got to try and get there. And all of a sudden, I just felt hands on my back. And as I felt the hands on my back, I didn't dive, I just fell over. And as I fell over, I basically just, the noise, I just thought, was that the whistle? And I looked up at the referee, and he was pointing at the spot, and I thought, who's taking penalties? I thought, am I taking penalties? I went, no. And I thought, oh my God. And I looked around, and John Collins had the ball, peacocking. Confident and just walked away, and I thought, thank God somebody's confident of taking the penalty because he's nervous. And the wee man stood up and put it home. And from that, I thought, this is an opportunity because Brazil had problems, big problems. Ronaldo had problems, he wasn't playing the best. Rivaldo, I mean, he's some of the best players in the world, if not the best players in the world. But we seen an opportunity and we had our chances, we just didn't take them.
That feeling, it was just such a release, such an explosion of joy. And I'm sure around the world, people would have been cheering that goal. Not just Scottish people, but people of all nationalities would have just thought, bloody hell, there's Scotland going and equalised against the world champions. And that moment, it is one of, it's up there when my kid's getting born. It is one of the best moments of my life, absolutely.
The score at half-time was locked at 1-1. Craig Brown gave a big team talk at the break.
Now, just calm it down a wee minute, lads, and we just listen here. The last 25 minutes of that half, magnificent. We've always had to claw our way back for a goal behind. Why do we have to do that? This half, get the goal ahead and then we can play with time. Now, that'll come from balls quickly up to the front. If we have a few passes in the middle, then into the channels. Every time him or Kevin, Juki or Kevin, have got a ball through, the back men are struggling. Aldair's no fit. So the ball gets put up to them earlier, far, far sooner than we did for the first 20 minutes in the game. Brilliant character coming back after losing a goal so early against them. Christian, you've got to believe that you can knock it by him and run. He elbowed you after the ball once, we didn't get the foul. We'll get it if you keep doing it.
Hey, at the start, okay, a wee bit nervous start, but I'll tell you, you've all come over that. Concentration all the time. And although we say keep possession, sometimes if we have to give it up, throw it in a corner. Throw it in a corner and give possession away there. We don't want to be brave losers.
Hey, confidence, come on! Oh, no. We're going to win!
Come on, believe it! Come on.
The second half was even more encouraging for us. We did get a number of shots in goal. Then disaster struck. An own goal from Tommy Boyd gave Brazil a lucky winner. We didn't feel the goal against was deserved and naturally everyone was quite despondent. The messed up free kick which we'd practiced almost got us a late equaliser. But unfortunately Kevin Gallagher's shot just went over the top. Sporting handshakes were exchanged after what was, in many people's opinion, the best opening World Cup match in years. Even the great Ronaldo looked to be very relieved to get a victory against Scotland.
It was wonderful being there. You've been beaten by one goal by the best team in the world, in the World Cup. I'm sure they were relieved. Yeah. As disappointed as if any Scotland fans were disappointed, and you're disappointed because your team's just lost. I'm sure the Brazilians were very relieved to have got away with a win. Absolutely. So I mean, it was your enthusiasm and your optimism is not diminished at all. You just think on to the next game. Let's be fair. How many Scotland fans were expecting a win from that game? You're plotting your route to the final, maybe not banking on a win in that opening fixture.
Despite that loss in the opening game, Norway and Morocco had drawn their match 2-2, so the group was still wide open. Our second match was to take place against Norway, with Scotland fans flocking to Bordeaux.
Bordeaux was just one of those days where it was just incredible to be there. All Scandinavian fans have been fantastic any time I've been to any of those countries. And the Norwegians are no different. What a great bunch. Very similar to Scotland in the fact that there's a lot of families going, a lot of groups of friends, no trouble at all. A very colourful experience. Really, really good. Throughout the game, brilliant atmosphere beforehand with everybody. Absolutely. First class. All the fans. It was just one massive big party in the sunshine. What an experience. And it was from there that I think Scotland won. That's when the mayor of Bordeaux had put an advert in the papers, in the Scottish papers, a little while later, thanking the Scotland fans for being there because it turned into just one massive party. It was good. We didn't know that was going to be the only point we were going to get from that tournament. It was a fantastic day in the sunshine. Absolutely wonderful.
Oh, and they've left Flo. Have on, Flo! And Scotland concede a goal right at the start of the second half.
Where's David Weir?
Craig Burley chasing. And Burley gets there! Well, it's been an enterprising period of play from Scotland. And it's been rewarded with the equaliser. 1-1.
Yeah, I think we deserved that point. I mean, it was a cracking goal for Craig Burley. The ball through and, I mean, a fantastic finish. And I remember after the game bumping into some Norwegian fans, just randomly, guys that we had met before the game. We hadn't arranged to meet up with them, but we were chatting to the same guys we'd spoken to beforehand. And I think there was just such a feeling of respect between the fans. We got a draw, they'd got a draw, game could have gone either way. And I think that respect and having a couple of beers together after the match was brilliant, really good.
And so it would come down to the final match. As it stood, Brazil had qualified from the group with 6 points. Norway had 2 points from 2 draws. Scotland and Morocco, a point each. So we had to beat Morocco and hope that Norway get no better than a draw against world champions Brazil. Tom Boyd looked ahead to the match.
Well, up to now, at this moment in time, we stand just in 1 point from 2 games, which I think we can consider ourselves a little bit unfortunate not to have more. You know, we've played very well. The boys have performed exceptionally. And, you know, we're just looking out. You know, it's out with our control at the moment for the final game if Norway do beat Brazil. But we're hoping that Brazil will do us a favour and avoid defeat. And that gives us a chance to qualify if we beat Morocco.
Perhaps no easy feat, but not impossible either. Should Scotland progress, it would be the first time getting out of a World Cup group at the 8th time of asking. Christian Daly was in good spirits ahead of the match, but knew how big the game was.
Although I've been playing centre-half all season, I intend to not defend one bit against Morocco and to just go forward at all costs, because we must win the game. And I'm going to leave it all to Tom Boyd, who will be playing behind me, to do all the defensive work. And I'm putting the pressure on. I wouldn't do that to him. But nah, it's the biggest game in Scotland's history. And, you know, just want to do well. Just want to be able to run for 90 minutes non-stop.
You're thinking you're going to win. I mean, who are Morocco? I mean, it's 1978 all over again. Who are Peru? I mean, it's Morocco. Well, hammer Morocco. And it's at that stage that you start getting ahead of yourself as well. So my mate Dave and I, John had to go back to Scotland, and the wives were going back to Scotland. But Dave and I are, right, it's time to look, where are we going in the next game? Once we beat Morocco, where is the next game? And it was going to be in Marseille, I think, which is where our next game was going to be. So Dave and I we've got the train timetables memorised for how we're getting from Saint-Étienne down to Marseille for the next match.
The Moroccans kicked off, and for the first 20 minutes or so, things were very even. We had one or two chances, many of them inspired by Christian Daly on the left. This time, Kevin Gallagher laid a nice ball inside to John Collins, whose shot was blocked. But Kevin was played in again. Unfortunately, his cross was cut out confidently by the Moroccan goalkeeper. But still, we kept up almost incessant pressure until the half-time whistle. But disaster struck when the ball sailed over the head of Colin Henry, and it was dispatched brilliantly into the net at the near post. This was a major tragedy in view of the fact that we appeared to be settling very well in the match. There was attack after attack in the Moroccan goal, but still we couldn't get the elusive equalising goal.
And so we trailed at the break. Craig Brown's half-time team talk attempted to reinstill belief into the team.
Now there's great occasion here to be calm and to put the ball in behind them. Every time it goes down into their left-back position, you Jackie's getting oceans of space. We're up there, we're hitting good long-range ones, we're getting into close distance as well. We're crossing was sometimes too tight on the goalkeeper, but we're crossing them. We've made more chances, believe me, than we've made in the previous games. Get yourself belief back. We're a far, far better team than they are. But you've got to realise that. You've got to go out here. This is 45 minutes. We'll do all right.
And the longer the game goes, do not panic. Do not panic. Because a draw could take you through if Brazil win it. It's all square there. So let's be calm, cool and collected. Okay? We know we can do better. Come on then.
We kicked off in the second half very well and again looked to be in a threatening position. But once more we were caught out at the back, and a long ball over the top was finished rather fortunately, I felt, but the Moroccan team were 2 up and it was an uphill struggle from here. We did manage to create one or two more chances. Craig Burley, a great left foot shot, straight to the goalkeeper, unfortunately. But then disaster was to strike. Craig rashly tackled from behind and the referee had no option. We were reduced to 10 men and that meant it was a mountain to climb. But we could have no complaint because we were well warned that a tackle from behind would result in an ordering off. Even with 10 men we created chances, but the Moroccan goalkeeper was in inspired form throughout. But finally disaster struck when from just inside the box a deflected shot gave Morocco a 3-0 victory. Celebration for Morocco, but for us, the end of our World Cup campaign.
I think we looked at the Moroccans as being very weak, probably weaker than Estonia, I think, personally. And we went out and underestimated them. They played football, they played us off the park, and we just couldn't take chances, we just couldn't get there, we couldn't get chances. And that's the disappointing thing. They were just so energetic. I just think they wanted it probably that little bit more than what we did. We thought, this is it, it's an opportunity. If we beat them, we could qualify, because Brazil's going to beat Norway. And it completely just melted away right in front of us. It was such a horrible feeling at the end of the game. It was really weird, and I know we had to go around to see the fans, but it was, we just wanted the ground to lift up and just swallow us up.
It's just one of these things where everything in front of you is just going wrong and you've got no control over it. You're getting a guy sent off. Yeah. You had that speedy wee winger that they had, can't remember his name, he was electric. And it's just like one, two, three. I mean, it was just, it was more shock than, and there's obviously a disappointment, but there's no anger. I mean, there's no anger. You can't be angry because the better team have just cuffed you. Yeah. There's no point in being angry about things. I mean, it's disappointing, but it's just, it was mostly just shock. You're coming out and then you're thinking, I'm going to have to go back to work on Monday. I was getting another week's holiday. You're feeling proud. You're feeling proud that you've managed to be away and support your team. And you can tell by when you're getting back and you're going back to work or you're meeting your friends or you're meeting your family, everybody's jealous because it's like, tell us about it. What happened? What was it like? What was the game like? What were the fans? You felt enormous pride having been there to follow your team and to have been part of something. I mean, it was a brilliant summer. Everybody's a great advert for your country.
Anybody that plays international football, that is what you're trying to do, really. You've got the Euros and you've got the World Cup, and I was lucky to have achieved to have played in both of them.
And 23 years later, we're going to do it all again. A new squad, a new perspective, and a new generation of fans will finally get to experience Scotland at a major men's tournament. It may not be how we envisioned our return to the European stage, but no matter where you find yourself come June, embrace it. We are back.